minutes ago. I'm looking real good in my passport photo. Amateur Traveler, episode 798. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about hikes and haircuts, cliffs and a caravan sarai, beaches and a gorge, as we go to the island of Cyprus. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Cyprus. I'd like to welcome back to the show Audrey Scott and Daniel Knoll from UncorneredMarket.com, who've come to talk to us this time about Cyprus. Audrey and Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
We're really glad to be back.
And we say back, we have done shows with you, I know, on Berlin, where you live now, on Prague, on Bangladesh, on Haiti, and I can't remember what other shows we've done.
Right. And we'll, one of these days, we'll make a connection between all of them so it's clear why we chose those destinations, or you chose those destinations for us.
Excellent. And Cyprus, what's your connection with Cyprus?
Before visiting, we didn't really have much of a connection. We live in Prague. We live in Berlin. And Cyprus, for us, was kind of this destination or Mediterranean island in the south, which in the wintertime means more sunshine and warmth. So we had been curious about going to Cyprus for years, had planned to go there previously during New Year's breaks, and it never really worked out. And so this year, even though it was a pandemic, the stars kind of aligned and we thought, okay, this is the year to go and explore this island that was a bit of a mystery to us, because the only thing we had really known about Cyprus before we visited were the beaches, and our focus was actually something very different. So for us, it was trying to find a different side of the island and focus on more of the nature and the hiking.
I mean, we did have some level of professional connection because we had worked on a Mediterranean ecotourism project that encompassed Cyprus as well. But in that work, we didn't have a chance to experience Cyprus other than to know that it was a traditional destination. It suffers a little bit under the mass tourism that it experiences quite a lot. The other connection that I had, I became interested in Cyprus because I read this, I don't know, 1,000-page book written by an author named John McPhee, not the guy who absconded off to Central Asia, but the writer for The New Yorker. And the book was called Annals of the Former World, and it's sort of a geological macro history. And in one of the chapters there, he talks about Cyprus and the sort of geological diversity of Cyprus. And so that also kind of got me interested. Like, I want to see this beyond what most people know about this island nation in the Mediterranean.
Excellent. And that just reminded me, when we talked about hiking, that was one of the other times you were on the show, was talking about hiking in the Balkans. So
that's right.
I know that there was at least one more time you were on. And why should someone go to Cyprus?
Oh, lots of different reasons. A lot of people don't know, but it actually does have some really great hiking, not only in terms of coastal routes, where you have kind of these beautiful, dramatic cliffs and crystal clear Mediterranean Sea beyond, but Cyprus also has the Troodos Mountains, which I think the summit is 2,000 meters, so a little over 6,000 feet. So when we were there at New Year's, end of December to beginning of January, there was actually snow in the mountains. So in the course of 1 week, we were hiking in t-shirts along the coast in sunshine, and then we were hiking in the snow in the mountains, and then we also found a canyon and we're kind of climbing over rocks and boulders. In addition to all the hiking, there's also an incredible history in Cyprus going back about 8,000 to 10,000 years. So many layers of civilizations, from the Greeks to actually the Egyptians. And so there are some very interesting archaeological sites. Dan already mentioned some of the geological sites.
Right. Also, culturally and geopolitically, Cyprus is in an interesting position because it's actually fairly close to Lebanon and Israel and the Levantine Middle East. And that actually plays a role when you set off on the ground there. You hear a lot of different languages. You turn on the television in Cyprus. And this is something that's definitely, even if you don't enjoy watching television, turn the television on in your hotel, and there you'll hear Arabic, you'll hear Hebrew, you'll hear Greek, Italian, of course, English, and then
Turkish.
Also Russian and Turkish.
Yeah.
And that gives you an indication of the role that Cyprus plays as a member of the European Union, but being kind of on the edge or an outpost mm-hmm. of the most eastern outpost of the European Union. So that's fascinating, I think.
And the two dominant cultures, if you want to call it that, is kind of Greek and also Turkish. So the southern part of the country is more Greek. The northern part of the country is more Turkish influence.
Excellent.
And then, of course, there are also all the beaches.
And then all the beaches. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
We might have a little bit of a non-traditional itinerary because we were focused on being outside as much as possible. We came from mm-hmm. Berlin winter, so which means very dark and cold.
And these last 2 years, a lot of us have been focusing on our outside activities. Yes, exactly.
Yes. And also we love hiking anyways. So a suggested itinerary would be a combination of several hikes, including a couple of coastal hikes, and we can go into more detail on what we recommend for hiking, as well as visiting the mountains. And then combining that with visits to the capital city of Nicosia. Mm. And there's actually two sides. The capital city is still divided. So you can visit the southern side, which is the more Greek-oriented side, or you can travel across the border for the day to the northern side. And then to end perhaps on the coast with some more hiking, as well as visits to archaeological sites.
So, of course, we traveled in the end of December and January, and so things like wineries were not necessarily mm-hmm. available to us. And maybe we'll talk about this in the course of our discussion. But
because it was off-season.
Yeah, it was off-season. But the quality of wines in Cyprus are surprisingly good. And the cuisine is, I wouldn't characterize it as particularly unique or uniquely spectacular. It's very much Greek on the mm-hmm. Greek side, very much Turkish on the Turkish side. But the combination of sort of the outdoors, the beaches, high quality wine, and generally decent food available makes it a nice kind of rounded vacation or getaway that is one part outdoor, but also sort of culinary and cultural. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thrust of the kind of vacation or getaway that we're advocating here.
And one of the things that we did that we would also recommend to anyone visiting Cyprus or at least traveling around is to rent a car. Because the island is not particularly big. There is public transport, but the buses are not super frequent. So you're kind of challenged dealing with schedules. And we found that renting our own car was reasonably priced. And also it allowed us a lot of flexibility. So in terms of getting to trailheads, in terms of visiting small villages, if the wineries had been open, we could have stopped at wineries along the way. One note, though, is driving is on the left side of the road.
Oh.
Yes.
I think that's a holdover from when Cyprus was either a British protectorate.
Yeah.
And so what we did is we flew from Berlin into Larnaca. There's two main international airports in Cyprus. One is Larnaca and the other is Paphos. So Paphos is further in the south. Larnaca is a little bit further east. If you're coming from Europe, there's lots of low-cost airlines that have direct flights. If you're coming from the United States, you probably would be transiting through Greece or another kind of major hub on the way to Cyprus. And then from there, we picked up our car at the airport in Larnaca and then spent a day on the coast near Ayia Napa, which is mainly known for the beaches and a lot of resorts. We bypassed that and went to and did a 6-mile hike along Cape Greco, which kind of has these sea caves and limestone cliffs and kind of an interesting diversity of nature with hills and hikes and desert, but then also flowers and lush kind of rainforest, not rainforest, but like lush nature as well. And then we went to Nicosia for 3 days. And that is interesting because, again, you have the two sides of the capital city. And on the Greek side, we essentially spent the first day because it was raining like cats and dogs. This is one of the things when you travel in the wintertime in the Mediterranean is the weather can be a little challenging. So we are constantly checking mm-hmm. our weather apps to adjust. But there is an archaeological museum there, which is relatively small, but is incredible. And I say that because often when I hear archaeological museums or ancient historical museums, I often get rather bored quickly.
I don't know that I necessarily get bored, but
it could be a little dry.
Right.
And this is not dry.
Sure.
What I often feel, and I imagine most people might relate to this, is it can feel overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of information. And so one of the things that this particular museum does is it does not overwhelm, and it did a really excellent job of actually interpreting all the little piece parts of its mm-hmm. exhibitions and then putting that into context. Like we didn't do a whole lot of research on Cyprus before going, but it has a really deep, unsurprisingly actually, given its location, it has a pretty surprisingly deep history with a number of different civilizations, as well as a sort of like cultural artifacts and various digs that have been done to expose those different civilizations. So it's definitely absolutely worth it. So we welcome the fact that it poured cats and dogs and it rained. It drove us very quickly inwards, but we had heard about this museum and it had been recommended a number of times to us, and for good reason. It's definitely doable in a couple hour period of time, and you feel like, okay, I actually learned something there in a relatively short period.
And it's free to enter.
Well, and we're doing this a little out of order, but where is the museum?
It's in Nicosia, so the capital
city. In Nicosia, okay.
In Nicosia proper. So it's kind of the main archaeological museum for the entire country.
Got it. Okay. Well, yeah, and I was surprised. You talked about the depth of history. I was surprised it goes back 12,000 years. I guess I shouldn't have been, but I was. Let's jump back to the beginning of your itinerary. Let's go back to, you started in Larnaca. Did mm-hmm. you see anything in Larnaca, or do you recommend anything there before you head off to the Cape Greco area?
We just spent the morning. I mean, we arrived in the evening and walked around, had dinner with some fresh seafood. But in the morning, we walked along the seaside. So there's actually a very nice promenade, as well as a little old town in Larnaca with a cathedral or church. I don't remember if it's an official cathedral, but a very dramatic church that is one of the oldest churches on the island that I think goes back maybe 1,000 years, something like that. So it has this, it's very compact, the old town. So you can walk around in the course of a couple of hours.
But for us, and I think I'd probably recommend it, it's a jumping off mm-hmm. point. So it's a nice place to fly into, to base yourself, to get a taste, to not feel overwhelmed, and then head off into another direction, either to a beach or, like what we did, head to a hike towards the southeast Cape Greco area.
Well, and the Cape Greco is the furthest most eastern point on the south.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
The resort area that you mentioned that you did not go to, is that west of Larnaca, or where is that?
It's east of Larnaca and west of Cape Greco. So it's about a 10-15 minute distance from Cape Greco.
Okay, and none of this being, again, as you said, that far apart.
Yeah.
Right. It's a relatively compact island, and maybe we'll get to this as we discuss the trajectory of our trip. But there are also fairly well-known beach areas to the west of Larnaca mm-hmm. as well, if that's something that's of interest. For us, we said, all right, how do we get the greatest breadth of this island and the outdoors, given the weather circumstances and the flexibility that we have? How do we do that most effectively? And so that's why we ended up heading east and said, okay, you can drive an hour east to get to Cape Greco, do what you need to do, and then it's just another hour and 15 minutes, and boom, with a car, you're in the capital city of Nicosia.
Excellent. So Cape Greco, mm-hmm. you described the Cape Greco area as where you were doing your hiking. Tell us more.
So Cape Greco is most famous for what they call the sea caves, which are basically limestone cliffs that are kind of being eroded away by the sea. So mm-hmm. it has this dramatic overlook, the waves crashing. And then there are also areas around there with lagoons, these crystal clear blue lagoons. And then also the trail continues past a church that's beautifully placed right on the sea's edge. And then we ended our trek, our hike, on a beach, which was actually very nice to be. We didn't go in the water, but to be able to take off your shoes and walk in the sand in late December is very nice. So we finished our hike along the beach and then made our way back to the car. So that hike has a lot of, it's kind of a bit desert-like, but then there's also this area with these winter blossoming flowers. And then there's also an overlook that we didn't go to that has a overlook over the whole peninsula, if you want to call it that. But we stayed close to the sea because that's where we wanted to be.
And I think in terms of landscape and nature, this is probably true throughout the entire island, but was certainly the case with Cape Greco, is that there's a variety of sort of herbs, mm-hmm. flora, flowers, depending on the season. So we were catching kind of the front end of what were like winter wildflowers. We hear that the spring is particularly beautiful. It's mm-hmm. a nice time actually to go and when you're walking, actually meet and talk with people mm-hmm. because they're going to be out, since the weather is beautiful, they're out all the time, and they're going to be picking different flowers and herbs. And in terms of like a real local authentic experience, this is it, because you actually meet real people when you take walks on these things. And if you have the courage, like we did, we asked a couple, like, what are you picking and why are you picking it? And had a 20-minute conversation with them about the wildflowers that they were picking and that they're exceptional and they keep their aroma for such a long time and they love to live on the island and people are very excited there about being Cypriots.
And you were doing that conversation in your fluent Greek?
Actually, this is one thing you'll find is a lot of people do speak English and very okay. good English. I mean, this couple that we ran into, they're not working in tourism. They're just local people who had driven themselves from Larnaca because they said these flowers only bloom for 1 week. So they made a special trip from Larnaca just to pick the flowers. But yeah, we found everywhere that language wasn't a problem, both on the southern side, as well as when we went to the Turkish side in Nicosia for the day. So English is in most places.
Right. Restaurants. I got my hair cut in the Turkish side in Nicosia, and the Turkish barber there, not totally fluent in English, but certainly mm-hmm. knew enough of it to have a conversation.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, and did your hike that you went on have a specific name?
We combined several Cape Greco hikes
okay.
because we wanted to hike as long as possible. So it was basically a Sea Caves to Cape Greco hike.
Okay.
We actually followed, when we're planning our hikes, we often use Komoot.com. It's a hiking and kind of mountain biking and outdoor trail website, as well as an app. And then we also use alltrails.com. So often when we're planning a trip, we kind of know the areas we want to go to. We mm-hmm. search for those areas on those websites and then find, okay, what are the types of trails that match our interests as well as the amount of time we want to hike or the distance we want to hike. So one of the trails on Komoot combined, I think, two or three smaller hikes to create a longer loop, which, because a lot of people will just go out to the Sea Caves, but we wanted kind of a 6-mile loop. So we ended up connecting several others to make it longer for us.
So in this, you have done multi-day hikes, but this was a day hike.
This was a day hike. And all the hikes okay. we did in Cyprus were day hikes, usually okay. between 6 and 10 miles in terms of distance.
Okay.
And they're the sort of thing that you don't need to be a professional mm-hmm. hiker or trekker to do. And most of these are so accessible mm-hmm. that, let's say you don't want to do the 10-mile Dan and Audrey version, but you'd like to do something a little bit shorter and more reasonable.
The 2-mile Chris version. Yeah, I understand.
Right, the 2-mile or the 4-mile. Most of these places have those kinds of options. The 2 or 4 miles cut a little okay. bit shorter. If you want to make it longer and go up into the mountains for more viewpoints and vistas, you can do that. And I think it's probably fair to say that the Cape Greco hike is probably more of a walk. And then once we went into the mountains, in the Trodos Mountains, and then to Paphos, those hikes are progressively more impressive, I would say.
And difficult.
And difficult.
Okay. Anything else we want to say about the Cape Greco area? I see it's also an important area for migrating birds, but I don't know if winter is the time to see that.
We did not see migrating birds at the time, but mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that I would say is the area, it's a protected area or a national mm-hmm. park. So bring your own water and bring your own food because okay. there's not a lot of options there. So that's one thing we learned.
Probably the hard way. We had to fight over a very small bag of nuts that day. Then we went to Nicosia, and there's plenty of restaurants there. So, of course, we could eat to our heart's delight and content.
Yeah. Once you leave the resorts of Ayia Napa behind, it becomes a little bit more remote, which is great because you want to be mm-hmm. in nature. But there's not a lot of services out there, we found.
Well, and it sounds like those are close enough that if you were looking for more of a resort vacation, but you wanted to add a hike, it would be easy to combine the two.
Absolutely. I think that's the case with any of these destinations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when we get to Paphos, that's probably the best example of all. Like there are not only beaches there, but there are archaeological ruins there. There are short hikes along the beach. If you have a car, you can get access to other hills and hikes and treks and things. So it gets pretty rich when you head out.
Well, is that our next stop or where are we going next?
Let's say after Cape Greco, we went to Nicosia for 3 days. Okay. I think we mentioned already mm-hmm. the archaeological museum, as well as just wandering around the old town. There's a lot of small alleys as well as marble streets. So the old town is quite pretty. And there's also
the remnants of a walled city. So you can actually walk around the old walls mm-hmm. of the city on the Greek side. So you have that in terms of what feels like ancient history.
Mm-hmm. It's Phoenician.
Yeah, the Phoenician okay. area. And then when you go over to the Turkish side, then you have things like caravanserais and mosques and obviously more Turkish and Islamic mm-hmm. Type architecture. And the way that we did this, and in part this was again because of the weather, but we had sort of planned to do this, is to at least spend a day on the Greek side and then plan to spend a day on the Turkish side.
Okay.
And it's relatively easy to make your way from one to the other. It looks a little imposing mm-hmm. because there's actually a United Nations border green line that mm-hmm. divides the city of Nicosia, which, by the way, when you get there, this is a little surprising. Maybe we didn't do our research. It's called Lefkosia. Nicosia is by the locals. That's its local name. Lefkosia, Nicosia is split. The city itself is split by the green line, and that green line effectively divides the nation in the Greek Cypriot side to the south and the Turkish Cypriot side to the north. And again, it looks imposing, but if you have your passport and during the time of COVID, if you have your vaccination certificate and you have, at least at the time that we traveled, a PCR test, which we were required to get at the airport and cost 15 euros upon arrival, you can go over the border and it literally just takes like a minute or two and boom, you're on the Turkish side of Nicosia and you can visit the caravanserai, the various bits of Islamic architecture. You can get very different food. It's going to be Turkish food. Mm-hmm. People there were very friendly, unsurprisingly. You can get a haircut, which I did. My barber even did for me the first thing, and I didn't realize this, and he didn't really intend to do this, but he actually waxed my forehead and the top of my face, which I don't know if we've talked about this for other destinations, but I've actually sampled barbers around the world, and I've never had
quite an experience. I don't think we have talked about that. Is this your first face wax?
Yes, it's my first face wax. And when it was happening, I didn't realize it until it became too painful. But the entire time, Audrey watched it unfold.
Because I knew what was happening. I knew it was happening. And I knew it would not be pleasant.
So, but most of your listeners are probably not going to go and get their hair cut on the Turkish side of Nicosia. But what's interesting is you really get two different cultural sides of mm-hmm. the city and get two different cultural sides of the country. And it caused us to kind of look into like why and how did this happen? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we want to discuss this in depth, but it's something that happened in the early 1970s effectively mm-hmm. while I believe Greece was still, like much of Southern Europe, still had bits of dictatorship about, and they went in and then the Turks responded. And so here we are today. And it's kind of surprising, actually. Like, we live in Berlin and we know what it means to recover from a divided city. And there, Nicosia is still actually living through it mm-hmm. today.
Right. Question, you mentioned before we started recording that you chose not to drive in.
Correct. So we had read, and Audrey may add to this, so I was the one who had to drive. So I had a little bit of concern about this. There's the issue of things like insurance and safety. And it's been said mm-hmm. that if you take a car with a plate from southern Cyprus onto the northern side it may get vandalized. And similarly, if you bring a car from the northern side to the south, so it's really just not recommended. And we knew that most of our trip was going to be anchored by hiking destinations and require us to drive from place to place. So we thought if we ever go back to really more deeply explore more deeply the northern side outside of Nicosia, we would probably just go to the north side of Cyprus exclusively, rent a car there, and do what we need to do with a northern Cyprus plated car. But here we had a limited amount of time with a southern plated Cyprus car. We said, we're not going to go over the border with this. It just really was not recommended. It seemed like it was tempting fate.
And on top of that, when we rented the car at the airport in Larnaca, he asked, the person at the rental car office asked if we were planning on going to northern Cyprus because the insurance on our car was not valid there. So you also need to make sure that you buy extra insurance if you're going to go to the northern side.
I think the other thing that I'll note, we're having this conversation about cars getting vandalized. Honestly, never did we feel unsafe throughout this entire trip. Southern side, northern side, either side of Nicosia. It really, everyone was friendly. We felt safe the entire time. So it really, it was a non-issue. I think it's just a case of you do what the locals recommend you to do, and they don't recommend you to take a car from the south into the north.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about northern Cyprus? You were mainly there for the haircut and the face wax, as I understand.
Yes, as well as food. There was some great, obviously, Turkish food on the northern side. The only other thing I would say is technically the northern part of Cyprus uses the Turkish lira as their currency, but everything has a euro
equivalent
conversion, so you don't really need to change money. And also credit cards. Your credit card works the same. So it's really easy to just go across. And when you cross over, there's actually on the ground in the old town, a blue line, which you can follow to take you past the different mosques. Many of these mosques were originally churches, Orthodox churches that have been converted to mosques over the years, over the centuries, I guess I should say. There's also an interesting central market. There's a caravanserai. So this blue line kind of takes you through a lot of the old town and past the major sites. So that's kind of an easy way to orient yourself in the city.
You surprised me a bit with the mention of the caravanserai, which we've talked about before. So that's a place where you could park your caravan overnight on your caravan route. But it seems like Cyprus isn't a logical place to have a caravan route because it's kind of short.
I knew you were going to ask that, and I thought to myself, I'm not really prepared to answer that question. Yeah, they took the ferry.
Actually, I don't think you're far off, because I think Lebanon is very close by. Israel's not that far, and so there were trading routes the traders used.
It's been on the trade routes for 2,000 years, but yeah.
But it's not your traditional
at least
Silk Road caravanserai that
right,
you would find
right
in other places.
And so you were mostly there for the doner kebabs and the baklava, as I understand it then.
To a great extent. But I think actually it was interesting to see the state of, quite honestly, decrepitude of the buildings in northern Nicosia. Hmm. It's clear that they haven't received the level of attention and investment that perhaps they should. And I suspect that might follow the fortunes of perhaps the Turkish nation and also the Turkish lira, because there were a lot of buildings that just looked like it had been several years before they had received any attention at all, whether it was having holes patched in them or a paint job or anything like that. So I think for us, it was just more a question of just curiosity. And then also we were interested to see what the feeling was like. This is a divided city. So what does one side think of the other? And it's not like we had these very deep conversations where we asked the northern Cypriots, what do you think of the people in the south? And likewise, it was more just like, okay, what's the difference here? And clearly there's a cultural difference. And it's interesting because you have Turkish culture and Greek culture in Cyprus, but Cyprus is an independent nation. And I think that's something that before we went, I don't think we really sort of understood what that meant. But there's a Cypriot identity. And you actually see quite a lot of graffiti saying Cyprus should be reunited as Cypriots. And of course, either side will say under their flag, perhaps. And that's a function of sort of politics and geopolitics and the messiness of it all. obviously the features are a little bit different. Like actually, as we were walking through the Turkish side, it was interesting because we said, I wonder where these folks are from or what the path they took, given you know, their looks and what their DNA might be. And I think that happens just by walking the streets there. And I think also when you're in a place like Cyprus, and particularly after you visit the museum there, you think, wow, this place has been around for a long time.
Right.
Lots of folks have stepped foot here and left their mark. And this island and its texture is the result. So I thought that was pretty neat. And that's not something that's really top of mind when Cyprus is promoted through tourism media, because they make most of their money through beach vacations.
Right, sure. Well, it was funny because when you were talking about the fortress in southern Nicosia, I could have sworn that Audrey said Venetian and Daniel said Phoenician. And I couldn't tell if you were both saying the same thing or different things. And it could be either one because they were both there.
Venetian, yeah.
I assumed it was Venetian, but it was sort of like, well, it could have been Phoenician, but I don't think a lot of those are left. But it probably was Phoenician at some point.
The other thing that we'd recommend, this is not a particularly pivotal site, but there's a building that you can go up to the top on the southern side of Nicosia that gives you an aerial view of the entire city, both north and south. And it's not especially well done, but it's well done enough to help you understand where the mosque is, where the caravanserai is, where all the sort of major churches are on the south side. And that gives you an aerial view of how the city is split and what the aerial texture of the city is. So that's a worthwhile visit, particularly before you go into the north.
That building is tall. That's
basically the only tall building in the southern part.
There you go.
And I think it's €2. You take an elevator to the top. When I say tall building, I'm talking like 8 floors because the old town, everything is relatively short. But it has photographs kind of showing what you're looking at. And you'll notice, obviously, that on the northern side, you'll see all Turkish flags. When you look to the south, it's the Cypriot flag.
Looks like the Shakalos Tower Museum and Observatory.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So from Nicosia, we drove and we chose to take the mountain road. So it took us about 2 hours to drive from Nicosia to the Troodos Mountains. And there's actually a village called Troodos, which is very tiny, but it's basically where there are a lot of trailheads for different hikes. And actually nearby, there's also a ski resort, which one normally wouldn't think that Cyprus would have a ski resort, but it actually has a pretty active ski resort there. And we chose to do, it was a hike called the Atalante Trail, which was about 9 miles. And it essentially went around Mount Olympus. So it basically was a trail that went around the summit. So we didn't go all the way up to the top of Mount Olympus, which is at 2,000 meters, over 6,000 feet. But the trail kind of allowed us to see all different directions around, and it was clear enough when we did hike that we could even see all the way to the coast during the hike. So it provided this nice perspective of all the hills and the mountains around, but then also seeing out to the coast. And one of the things that we really liked about this trail were the trees and the flora. Like there was all this endemic shrubs and these old wire, like I think one of the juniper trees was about 500 years old. So they are all these gnarly windblown.
They were like giant bonsais, what they look like. So there are, and I think this may be on the, I don't know if I have my directions correct, but it may be on the west side. So it's actually very different. So on the east side, it's like pine forests. And on the west side, perhaps because it's more exposed, it looks really dry. And this is, it's actually in a way, in that way, it's very typical of many Mediterranean islands. So Cyprus is kind of one of those places in the Mediterranean where you think at one point this was all together and plate tectonics just broke it all up and fragments floated away. And Cyprus was one of those fragments. And as you walk around Mount Olympus and that exposed side, you've got these sort of gnarly juniper trees and juniper bushes. Really, they look like gigantic bonsais. Cypress firs. Yeah, there's just a lot of surprising diversity, natural diversity there that unlike we've seen anywhere else. And then on top of that, I think geologically, and maybe this is why weird stuff grows the way that it does, there are these geological structures called ophiolites that I'd read about in this book, Annals of the Former World, that was a Pulitzer Prize winning book about geological macro history. It's actually an area where a part of the mantle, that bit underneath the Earth's crust, has actually turned upside down and exposed itself. And so there are mines around that area, not that those are particularly exciting, that are exposed parts of the Earth's mantle, basically. It's unusual. And I think in the area around Mount Olympus and the Troodos Mountains, there are other parts of exposed, once liquefied, mantle of the Earth. And I think that actually plays a role, not only in how it looks, but also some of the stuff that grows there. So I thought it was pretty fascinating. I was actually hoping to spend a few more days there, but we had to head out to the coast because someone wanted some sunshine.
Yes.
I've been in Berlin in the winter. I understand why you might want some sunshine.
Yes. But if people do want to spend more time in the Troodos Mountains, there are little villages around there with bed and breakfasts. And there are a lot of different trails in the area as well. So we could have probably spent 3 or 4 days there, but yeah, we had limited time and prioritized.
Right. If we were on
the beach,
season.
Or not the beach, but the coast.
Actually, for the folks who are possibly planning to go from Larnaca north to Troodos, there are a couple of villages whose names I don't recall between those two areas, as well as wineries. So if it's in season, it's worthwhile pulling out a map and maybe even asking like where you've rented your car, because that's where we got the suggestions. The man who was running the rental car office, he said, I know someone here, you should go here. The food here is really great here. Just full of recommendations that I imagine we could have taken advantage of, not only if we had more time, but I think more importantly, if we happened to be there in the right season. There was a lot of great things happening for us because it was the off season. There weren't very many people, but there were a number of things were closed that otherwise would have been open.
Mm-hmm. But after we did the hike, in the snow. I mean, I think some parts there were like 8 to 10 inches of snow that we were walking through.
But this is the incredible thing. So we're in snow, we hop in the car, and in one hour and 15 minutes, we're basically in t-shirts and
on the coast. Mm-hmm. So that really shows you how compact the island is and how geographically diverse it is in such a small area. So after the hike in the Troodos Mountains, we drove to Paphos and we spent the next 3 days there. And we used Paphos, which is on the south-southwestern side of the island. Mm-hmm. We used that as our base to do a few more hikes along the coast as well as in a canyon, and also to explore some of the biggest archaeological sites on the island. And Paphos itself is traditionally kind of a touristy town. It was quite For us, it was nice. It wasn't so crowded when we were there, which meant that it wasn't full of active parties and loud music, but which I know that it has a reputation for from some of the reviews that we read on some of the hotels and accommodation we were looking at. But it actually has kind of a nice feel. There's some nice restaurants along the coast. There's a little old town area. And most importantly, it's about 45 minutes away driving from two great hikes. And one of them is called the Aphrodite Trail. And that's probably one of the most famous hikes in Cyprus. It takes you past the Baths of Aphrodite, which is a grotto waterfall area. But it takes you along the coast through some really beautiful southwestern landscapes where it's just crystal clear water and dramatic cliffs and these gnarly cypress trees and juniper trees holding on to the cliff's edge. And you just kind of wonder how they survive there. And then that trail takes you up to an overlook that again provides you a nice 360 degree panoramic view of that whole southwestern peninsula. The traditional route is about 4 to 5 miles. We added some extra, as we usually do. We combined it with the Adonis Trail, so that made it more like an 8-mile hike. But again, with all of these hikes, you have variations that you can take based on how much time you have, the difficulty you want, and what you're looking for.
Well, I also noticed you mentioned that you were staying in Paphos, that it is both a UNESCO World Heritage Site and was about 5 years ago a Capital of Culture. Mm-hmm. So when you say it's a beach town and has a lot of loud music, I picture something much more modern and sold us on, let's just say. Enjoyable, but, you know, not necessarily with the cultural depth.
There's both. I mean, that's actually the really interesting thing about Cyprus is you kind of have the two side by side, meaning walking up to the UNESCO sites, you're passing by some cheesy tourist souvenir shops. Like, so you kind of have...
Hey, I bought a few cheesy tourist souvenirs in my time, so...
Yes, I mean, I guess, but that's one of the interesting things is you have these two things side by side. And that's why for us, we spent two nights in Paphos, did a couple of hikes, and then our last morning, we spent exploring the archaeological site. So it was this nice combination.
Right, there's the main archaeological site in Paphos itself, and then there's another smaller site called the Tombs of the Kings.
Okay.
That is sort of just up the road. So the main archaeological site in Paphos is right there in the city. You can just walk right to it. And then there's also coastal walks along the way. So Paphos is a pretty city to base oneself to have access to quite a bit. Beaches, coastal walks, archaeological sites, as well as the two hikes that we did. Audrey talked about the Aphrodite and Adonis Trail. And the other hike, which was absolutely spectacular, was the Avakos Gorge hike.
Mm.
And again, you might not think of Cyprus in terms of gorges. This landscape was completely different to anything else we had seen on the island. But it was essentially a 3 to 4 mile hike through the gorge, which got rather dramatic at times. And because it had rained earlier in the week, it also... got a little slippery at times. We were climbing over boulders.
And getting stuck in what felt like pretty deep mud and quicksand. Having said that, most of the time it's not like that. And what most people do, and this gorge is about, I'm going to guess, and I should have done my research here. It's probably about 1,000 feet deep, perhaps, maybe even more than that. Typically what folks do, and we even the day that we were there when it was fairly wet, we saw families there, and there's obviously running water and stream through it that's cut the gorge through the ages and basically goes out to the coast. But as you go inland, it gets deep. It's beautiful. There are these really beautiful bits of light that come down through the gorge and through the rocks, loads of Instagrammable moments, if that's your thing. Most folks go in probably about a mile, I think, and then they turn back around. We went 5 miles. So actually, it's debatable. I think the GPSs on our phones didn't work properly, so it's debatable. Somewhere between, for us, 2.5 and 5 miles. I realize that that's not particularly precise. And once we emerged, quite thankfully, quite honestly, because there were parts in the very deepest part of the gorge back that were not particularly exceptionally safe. So what most people do in the mile in and come out is the safe bit. We went all the way to the end, and then we went up through the gorge and then emerged on the top of this hill with it's like all farmland. And so it's like mountain goats and sheep and farmers, as well as a lot of this kind of cypress trees that you see, some of the juniper forests, and again, that cypress landscape. And then you can just sort of wind your way fairly easily back above the gorge that you just walked back out to the coast.
So a lot of people go all the way out through the gorge and then come back the same way. But what we found is there's actually a return loop that goes along the rim of the gorge. So you get the benefit where you can look down into the gorge, but you also have the view of the coast just beyond. So it was kind of a nice combination of almost like two hikes in one.
As long as you don't mind mud and quicksand and
this is why all the trails in the gorge tell you that do not do this trail or do not do this hike when it's raining. And so we had to make sure that there was no rain on the horizon. But because it had rained 3 days before, there was a little bit of mud.
It was exciting. Basically, don't do what Dan and Audrey did.
No, we did. It was fine. Actually, one tip for that area is if you have walking sticks, bring your walking sticks because it's just nice to have that extra stability.
Yeah, whenever you're, I mean, this is more of a canyoneering kind of experience, and a walking stick is helpful. And also shoes you don't mind getting wet.
Yes, correct. Exactly. But as Dan said, there is a beginning section, there are walkways that take you to the entrance of the gorge. So you can also do that and then come back, which means you're not climbing all over boulders, but you still get the dramatic landscapes and nature.
Very cool. I think we're kind of wrapping up your itinerary. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else we want to say about the itinerary before we get into more general comments about Cyprus?
There's not a whole lot in depth that we would say about food, but I imagine okay. folks are probably curious about what that is or what that might entail. A lot of Greek food.
Mm-hmm. So that means a lot of souvlaki, a lot of grilled meats, meze, so hummus and tzatziki. Most restaurants, you'll find a beautiful meze platter to start with different types of dips. We were more focused on seafood, and obviously it's an island, so there is seafood, but the seafood does tend to be a little bit more expensive than the meat. Okay. So,
interesting.
Yeah, it tends to be a little bit more expensive than the meat. But we also found that most of the places we stayed also had a kitchen. We were kind of deliberately choosing little mm-hmm. apartments. So we could also stop at fruit and vegetable stands and pick up fresh fruit because it's a Mediterranean island. So there's also great local fruits and vegetables as well.
You mentioned hummus, and we're close enough now to Lebanon and Israel. Is hummus a warm dish? There? Does it have that Middle Eastern sort of style versus the cold, just out of the fridge version that we get in the U.S.?
It was almost in between. It was almost like room okay. temperature.
I'd say room temperature to cold.
Yeah.
I think similar to what we had in Greece. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
I would say it's definitely closer to that. And that makes sense because the food definitely has sort of a Greek, mm-hmm. at least on the south side okay. of the island, more of a Greek quality to it. With all the typical sort of meze dips and things. Yeah, it's either room temperature or served cold, not like the warm hummus or the masabaha type mm-hmm. style that okay. you would get further east.
It's just in between, so I didn't know where they were on the great hummus divide, as it were.
Right. Yes, right. There's a show that probably could be done where one discusses the great hummus divide.
Yeah. Excellent. As we head towards our wrap-up questions, anything else people should know before they go to Cyprus?
We haven't talked too much about when to visit. So mm-hmm. we visited in the wintertime, which for us we found great because, again, we were coming from Berlin and it was cold. Mm-hmm. So to have the coast and the temperatures usually were in the up to the mid-60s, but it often felt much warmer than that, meaning we were hiking in t-shirts. But as we talked with locals in terms of asking their recommendations, a lot of people said, yes, wintertime is great, but also spring, because that's when you also get the wildflowers, and it's before mm-hmm. the island gets really hot. And I say spring as in March, April. Other people recommended November, because it's still in, let's say, the high 70s, low 80s, but it's before the weather gets a little bit more unpredictable for winter in terms of the rains.
And unpredictable is like typical Mediterranean winter where rains come and stick around for several days mm-hmm. when you okay. least want them to. So in that respect, we were lucky, but we also remained flexible. Like that was a deliberate decision because we knew whatever the weather report was going to be a couple weeks before would change once we got on the mm-hmm. ground.
Sure.
So we adjusted for that. Summer is traditionally the high season for Cyprus, but it's also very hot. So several people told us that actually hiking, for example, the gorge, the Avakos Gorge that we mentioned, it can sometimes get dangerous hiking in the summertime because it does get so hot and people don't bring enough water. So if one is going and visiting in the summertime, just be very careful about the heat, sun exposure, make sure you have lots of water with you. And don't underestimate how severe the heat can be, because we've heard rumors or we've read stories of people getting heat stroke when they're out hiking because they're exposed and they don't realize.
Yeah, that is no fun.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, you are standing in the prettiest spot in Cyprus. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
So the first image that comes to mind is the first, I think it's probably mile 2 or 3 into the Aphrodite hike.
Okay.
If you do it the way we did it.
Which is counterclockwise. And you're standing on a cliff on the southwestern edge of the island, and there's this gnarly juniper tree that's just holding on to the edge. You can imagine it holding on against the wind for ages. And just this contrast of this tree and the sea and the clear water and the sunshine and just the fresh, clear air. It was, that for me was my Cyprus moment.
I'll just add plunging cliffs to that and that typical turquoise mm-hmm. sea right through it to the bottom, classic Mediterranean blue water. depending on where the sun happens to be, depending on when you happen to hike that trail, but it's magnificent. And it's there at about a 270-degree angle off that particular view. So it's gorgeous.
Excellent. So, Daniel, I'm hearing your agreement.
Yeah, sorry. I was supposed to give you something else, wasn't I?
You don't have to give me something else. No, it's okay if you both agree.
A close second was in that first mile of the Avacus Gorge, looking up.
Okay.
Probably between like around 10 or 11 in the morning and watching the light bounce off the crevices that tower above you about 1,000 feet. It makes you feel small and it makes you feel part of a beautiful world.
Very cool. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Cyprus.
The driving, even though I wasn't driving, the driving can sometimes feel a little precarious, even as a passenger.
So for me, and this is tinged with a little bit of sadness. In Nicosia, on the southern side, there was a doner kebab restaurant. On the southern side of the wall that divides the city, there was a doner kebab restaurant called the Berlin Wall.
Oh, funny.
Either that or getting your haircut on the northern side and getting your forehead waxed by one of the friendliest barbers in the world, by the way, who does not mean you harm, but does do.
And he actually was a really good barber.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Cyprus in just three words, what three words would you use?
Not as expected.
Yeah, I was going to say diverse natural beauty, but diverse culture too. So diversity in all.
Not as expected. So I understood Audrey's. You got to give a little more explanation for that, Daniel. What did you expect and what did you get?
I was really expecting more of kind of the mass tourism beach stuff being my only option.
Got it. Okay.
And I think this just proved, we did know that that was a possibility. That's why we went there. But this just proves every place that has kind of its primary prevailing story has another alternative if you just do a little looking for it. And I'm glad that we did, because it's just not, this particular angle of story is just not top of mind for Cyprus. And I'm glad to share it with other people, mm-hmm. because I think destinations like this really need these kinds of options mm-hmm. shared more often, so that people can see these destinations as culturally, geologically, geopolitically, natural diversity, they have a lot more going on than what brings them most of their money and most of their commercial tourism traffic. I think it's a good thing that we have this discussion.
Excellent. Well, our guests again have been Audrey Scott and Daniel Knoll from uncornermarket.com. And if we wanted to send people to your best post on uncornermarket.com on Cyprus, where are we going to send them?
There's an article on hiking in Cyprus. Everything that okay. we just talked about in terms of the details and also links to the trails are in that article.
And probably a little bit more depth on practical details, driving, how you might approach constructing an itinerary beyond the scope of a 1-hour discussion. It's in there.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming back on Amateur Traveler. Again, I sent off an email when I was looking for more guests to some of my favorite people. You were definitely in that group. So thanks for coming back on and sharing with us your newfound love for Cyprus.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. And thank you for telling us that we're among your favorite people. It's mutual.
Special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially, and you can learn what they get and how to become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And a double special thanks to Joseph Reno, who is the latest patron of the show. Randy, who is a patron of the show and also a recent guest talking about the Grand Canyon, commented about the episode we did recently about Antigua and Barbuda, and said during this episode there was a mention of bat guano harvesting. At one time there was also a brief effort to harvest bat guano in a cave in western Grand Canyon. Like most mining operations in Grand Canyon, the logistics and cost of retrieving such precious gems turned out to not be profitable. The cost of accessing it and transporting it out of such a remote, difficult location was too much to be worth the effort. Thanks, Randy. I did not know that. I have a couple shows coming up, one on Yosemite, another on Alaska in winter, that are in production. If you don't want to miss those, be sure to subscribe to Amateur Traveler so you get every episode. We'll have more shows beyond that. There will be one week that I'll be taking off in the near future because I'll be doing some traveling up to the TBEX, Travel Blog Exchange, Travel Blogging Conference in Eastern Washington. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, and thanks so much for listening.